Welcome to the Sunday Show with me, Christine, and Ronaldo Ghose, former parliamentarian, industrial psychologist, and podcaster. Welcome, Ronaldo.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for having me, and how's it to the BizNews family? I'm happy to hear when you state my titles, you know, because media still believes that I'm a former DJ. So at least I've upgraded now, you know, and they also don't mention the fact that I served as a counselor in Nelson Mandela Bay for 8 years. But according to them, I'm just a former parliamentarian and DJ, and now YouTuber. Okay, so
when you say something I don't like, I'm going to call you a DJ then.
Exactly. Okay. That. You're more than welcome to do that.
For our viewers who don't know, this show, the NDB Sunday Show, is named in honor of Neil de Beer, the politician who passed away last Sunday. And next Sunday, there will be no Sunday Show because it's Neil's funeral. And he had so many followers abroad in so many countries and across South Africa and Africa that we will be live streaming his funeral from 11:30. So please tune in to say that last goodbye with us. Ronaldo, meanwhile, there is outrage over President Cyril Ramaphosa going to Zimbabwe and praising their land reform program.
Oh, my moer is gekoer. Okay. Let me try and be not the old Ronaldo, you know, that got in trouble back in the day. Let me just say that you know, I know that Neil always added names for politicians, and I've got my own for Ramaphosa. It is Squirrel Ramamampur, because it looks like he drinks a lot of mampur before he makes statements. Now, that is alleged, you know, before the Hawks kicks down my door. What I want to say on that is, imagine for a second, you take the worst possible country as an example when you want to talk about land reform. Now, it is quite clear that the fast-track land reform that was implemented by Robert Mugabe was a complete and utter failure for Zimbabwe. In actual fact, it took a country that was on the up and up with the agricultural sector and turning them from a bread basket of South Africa to the basket case of South Africa. And that happened over the course of 5 to 6 years because of these fast-track land reform policies, where thousands of farmers' lands were taken away from them. And now people are saying, and what gets to me with regards to this, is Cyril Ramaphosa praised what Zimbabwe did. Now, don't get confused, because a lot of people are saying you are misunderstanding what he was talking about, is he's praising them rebuilding the agricultural sector. No, in his speech, you can clearly hear that he is saying that this was necessary to deal with the decolonization of Zimbabwe. So in essence, the president of South Africa has praised Zimbabwe for causing record inflation in a country where it reached the point where violence and human rights abuses was an everyday occurrence. This is what Cyril Ramaphosa is praising. The decline in agricultural production leading to starvation. This is what Squirrel Ramamampur is praising. Then the economic collapse, 40% retraction in the economy. This is what Cyril Ramaphosa is praising. Job losses just in the agricultural sector alone. That fast-track land reform policy that Squirrel Ramamampur is praising cost 300,000 to 500,000 jobs. And this is what Cyril Ramaphosa is praising. Then, of course, you know, they talk about the social inequality in the country and how it needed to redress the issues of the past. Well, please explain to me, for the first 15 years after that policy that Squirrel is praising, how did it benefit Zimbabwe? It didn't. It caused a massive economic retraction. It caused human rights violations and abuses. It caused land being stolen. It caused Zimbabwe to go into starvation. And ultimately, you know, who are the beneficiaries of this land reform? Well, 40% of the land went to ZANU-PF loyalists. Now, I'm assuming the reason that Cyril Ramaphosa is praising this is because hey, the ANC cadres have got to eat and they're looking forward to getting their parcels of land because, you know, who's not going to benefit if this had to be implemented in South Africa? The poorest of the poor. The people that are in actual fact landless. Those individuals won't benefit of this. It'll be, once again, the connected few that will benefit, whilst the majority of people that have never had land, they aren't the ones that will be getting it. So I'm just so flabbergasted and completely disgusted that one of the policies that is known around the world to be an absolute failure and cripple the country is being praised by somebody like Squirrel Ramamampoor. So at what point are we going to now just say enough is enough? Truly enough is enough. You know, I think we discussed this on a previous stream, but if you told me when Jacob Zuma resigned that we will get a president that is worse than Jacob Zuma, I would have laughed at you. And yet here we are in 2025 and we have a president that when the majority of people look at him say, we actually don't mind getting Jacob Zuma back. You know, just bring back Jacob Zuma. At least we knew what we were dealing with. With Cyril Ramaphosa, we don't know what we are dealing with because the one day he wants to be a free market economist. He wants to be somebody that wants to believe in free market. And the next day he's a communist and he wants to take land away from people that don't want to give their land, you know, at a reasonable price. So ultimately we are stuck with a president that doesn't know what he wants and then goes on a platform and praises an illegal activity and land reform. The irony, of course, here is that Cyril Ramaphosa is praising that when the actual president of Zimbabwe had to rectify the issues of the fast-track land reform because they admitted failure. In actual fact, I believe the number is $350 billion. Yes, that's right. Billion. And it's dollars that Zimbabwe is paying towards fixing the land, you know, re-establishing connections with previous owners of the land. So the reason that the agricultural sector is doing so well in Zimbabwe at this moment is because they asked the farmers to come back and assist them. That is why the agricultural sector is doing so well right now. If they didn't do that, and if they didn't offer the $350 billion, then Zimbabwe would be in the same situation that they were in soon after the fast-track land reform from Robert Mugabe kicked in. So this, once again, is just a clear illustration of Cyril Ramaphosa having absolutely no idea what he's talking about, or at least we hope. Because if he truly believes what he just said there, then there needs to be an immediate motion of no confidence brought against him. Oh, and guess what, Chris? There is one coming up really, really soon. Like I said before, get your popcorn ready. And people were upset because I said, get your favorite cool drink. Die manne wil drink. Hulle wil hard drink. So get your double Brana and Coke ready because it's going to be exciting. And I can't wait for it. Because if there's one president that deserves to be kicked out as soon as possible, that would be Squirrel Ramamampoor. Thank you.
Let's look at the past week. Guns and bullets being increasingly used to rule in silence the assassination of that insolvency lawyer, Bo van die Kerk.
Yes, Chris. You know, we've really lived up to that mafia state title, if you look at what is going on in South Africa, because it looks like anybody, you know, that is ethical and wants to do some investigation as to what is actually going on with state capture and also just pyramid schemes and Ponzi schemes. It seems that one of the most violent jobs that you can be in is in being an insolvency lawyer or an attorney. You know, what happened to Boer van die Kerk is just inexcusable, considering the fact that we know that insolvency attorneys are constantly attacked and also killed. We know of Thomas and Klute Murray, you know, the father and son duo that was involved in the Gupta case, or at least the, you know, dealing with the fallout with regards to that. And it's just reached a point where these individuals need to almost wear bulletproof vests to protect themselves. And this, so the Boer van die Kerk case has got to do with the NTC Global Ponzi scheme or alleged Ponzi scheme. And Bauer received a phone call, I believe a day or two before, saying that if he doesn't drop the case, he will be murdered. And then that is exactly what happened. And then I heard that Kurt Knoop, who is the business rescue practitioner, issued a statement yesterday saying that he will step back from this case. So this is now a situation exactly of what the perpetrators wanted. And I can't fault anybody for wanting to step away from this, but this is now creating this situation in South Africa where the criminals win. The criminals intimidate, and then people step back because they fear for their lives, because they do not have the protection. I don't know how many people have trust in the SAPS or in the Hawks protecting them. But here we've got three individuals that over the last few years have been killed when they were involved in state capture, because Bauer van die Kerk was also involved in the state capture cases, specifically the Gupta trials. So it's reached that point where, when will we be able to protect the whistleblowers? When will we be able to protect the individuals that are indicating and clearly showing us where corruption is taking place? We lost a really solid individual that was willing to fight for what is right in this country. But once again, because of the syndicates that we have, because of the government that we have, crime thrives, criminals are protected, and the people that want to blow the lid on corruption are ultimately the ones that are executed, because that is what happened. He was executed in a boardroom. The same with Thomas and Kluta Murray. It's the same thing that happened to them. So at what point will we see some consequences for that? At what point will these criminals be the ones that feel that they can't do anything and not the people that are going after them?
Mm. Well, and his killers probably don't live in fear of being caught, because the Murray's killers are still out there, despite, you know, information coming in within hours of who might have been behind it. So it's not only the lives of law-abiding citizens that are under threat, but free speech. We look at the Minister of Police on special leave, sending the Hawks after a podcaster for joking about him. And now mainstream media is also launching attacks on independent podcasters whom they perceive to be centrist or perhaps towards the right.
Yes. It's quite clear that this attack on podcasters, and let me rephrase that. When I say podcasters, I'm talking about alternative media. BizNews is alternative media. Ronaldo Host is alternative media. Chris Wyatt is alternative media. Anybody that is not a formal journalist and works for one of the big mainstream media outlets, that is alternative media. Now, we know that there's this bill that wants to get passed in South Africa, limiting what podcasters can and cannot say. Unfortunately for them, though, the incident that happened when the Hawks raided that podcaster, it just exposed, you know, what could happen if this law is implemented, because then this will become an everyday occurrence. And it's just completely unacceptable. And you can see that mainstream media is gearing up for this, because News 24 last week wrote two opinion pieces berating podcasters and saying that podcasters are actually the problem and not News 24. Now, George Claassen wrote an opinion piece on, you know, how influencers don't have to adhere to the press ombudsman, which I find comical, to be honest with you, because if a mainstream media outlet is found guilty by the press ombudsman, there's two things they need to do. They either need to retract or they need to apologize. There's no case of them having to pay money to people. And if an individual wants to take mainstream media to court, it'll cost them 500,000 to a million rand, because they have to pay it out of their own pocket, where the mainstream media outlet has got attorneys on retainer. So they can outlast you every single day of the year. And ultimately, you have to just hope that your case is strong enough for you to win it. So I get that George Claassen, you know, is still hurt that he had to apologize to me, News 24. And this is now obviously what they are doing and the target that they have placed on podcasters' backs. Pieter de Tooy also came out with an opinion piece going after Rob Hershoff. And I have to ask, why are things so sensitive there at News 24? You know, a multi-billion rand company that are going after podcasters. And I'm sure this is what is happening in the boardroom at News 24. They are sitting there pointing fingers at these podcasters and saying, you know, it's so unacceptable that these individuals aren't held to the same standards as us, and they are stealing our you know, poser geld. They are stealing our Snoopy money. And ultimately, what is just on display here is no. Self-reflect, look internally, and see what the problem is. The problem is that you are clearly showing this bias. Now, Chris, what I'm going to ask now is just a very honest question. I'll have the answer. And I hope that the people watching this also have the answer. News 24 proclaims that they do not have a bias, but I want to ask a question. If you have a look over the last 5 years and look at articles, negative articles that were written about right-leaning podcasters, so people that are in the center, leaning towards the right, or then conservative podcasters, how many negative hit pieces were written by News 24 with regards to them? A lot. I'm talking about 20, 25 easily. Now, the question is, how many podcasters that are center-leaning to the left or left-leaning podcasters have been taken on? The answer is zero. Zero negative articles about podcasters on the left. You can look at Jan Brey. You know, they saw a video, they went straight to print. And put it on the website. And then eventually, after the full context were given, then they hid an apology behind a paywall. The same thing that they did to me, they hid the apology behind a paywall. The same thing they did to Gaten McKenzie, to AfriForum, to Solidarite, to Alicia Page. Many people that they had to apologize to, they hid it behind a paywall. So I think it's more a case of the public losing faith in News 24 and other mainstream media outlets. Not because of what podcasters are saying, but how they are dealing with this and how they are presenting themselves to the public. So ultimately, we have that situation where News 24 wants to blame everybody but themselves for them losing, or the public losing trust in them and them losing subscribers.
Now, meanwhile, race remains a painful trending topic in South Africa. Ronaldo, let's go to Stellenbosch Municipality.
Yo. Chris, now that is an interesting topic, and I'll tell you why. The reason it is so interesting is because this happened in the heart of DA country, in Stellenbosch. Now, firstly, what I want to say is I know that a lot of people are going to look at the DA and go, oh, this is the DA's fault. And this is a golden opportunity for me as a bitter ex to come in and join on that hype train, but I'm going to give an opposing view. When people have to understand the fundamentals when it comes to a municipality, you've got your politicians on the one hand and you've got your administrative staff on the other side. Now, you must look at it as train tracks. The city manager is on par with the mayor. So the city manager is the mayor of the administrative staff, where the mayor is the mayor of the politicians and the mayor of the public. Now, every day-to-day things are run by the city manager to make sure that all laws are adhered to and that we follow the regulations according to the T. So when it comes to the administrative staff and the politicians, it runs like a train track and it should never ever cross, because then there's a problem, and it should never ever go too far away because then the train will derail. Now, in this case with Alexander Kannemeyer, the situation is quite clear that this was an administrative discussion, because we all saw the video of him being in a Teams meeting. Now, what's also important to note is that happened in 2023, I believe. That is what the Stellenbosch municipality came out and said. But then they retracted that statement because I'm assuming they probably saw that there was more to the video. Now, what I want to say is a lot of people will blame the DA for this, but ultimately, I don't believe that it was the DA's intention to instruct this. This was something internal. Now, we can argue about how do the city manager and the HR senior manager align? Who do they vote for? But that is not, you know, what is of value and of what is of importance here. What is of importance is that a senior HR manager was so comfortable on a Teams meeting with other colleagues there, knowing that it could be recorded, saying things like he wants to make life difficult for white employees so that they can they could get to the point where they didn't want to deal with the issues anymore and resign. Now, in 2023, to say something like that and feeling so comfortable in saying that speaks of a bigger problem that we have here. And this is a problem that has been set and an example that has been set by the ANC government with their racial policies that they have forced upon South Africa and then wanting to proclaim that, you know, we aren't a country that focuses on race anymore. But that is all you hear all the time. And it's always a white person that is, you know, to blame for what is wrong in this country. Even though if you look technically at the age of who should have been in politics during apartheid, you will find that those individuals will now be 80 to 90 years old. So when the ANC in 2025 are making insults or statements about white people in apartheid, they are talking to a generation or generations that had no hand in it. But now we get to the point where, you know, somebody like Alexander Kannemeyer feels so comfortable to say that he can't work with white people. They are causing problems all the time and he wants to make life difficult for them. Now, a lot of people are talking about the triple BEE policies, and to an extent that plays a part. But remember, this video is from 2023, and on the latest policies where the workforce has to represent the demographics of South Africa kicked in a couple of days ago. I believe it was the 1st of September. That is when that kicked in. So ultimately, we have a situation now of this individual now being placed on suspension pending this investigation. And ultimately, I think what is going to happen is, considering that it's a DA municipality and this has caused a lot of harm for the DA indirectly, because a lot of people will now blame the DA, even though technically it might not have been them, it's going to be very interesting to see what the outcome is. But with that being said, I know of being 8 years in council in the Nelson Mandela Bay municipality, sitting in council and being a councillor. It would have been very hard for the city manager and for the mayor to not have known that something like this has taken place. And the reason I say that is because, you know, your managers report to the city manager. And if something like this was said on a Teams meeting, this would have gone to the city manager. I don't see how it's possible that this in 2023 didn't immediately get referred to a senior director or then to the city manager, which then also means that the city manager would have had to inform the mayor. So now it's 2 years later, and finally we got to a point where this has now come out in the public. But Chris, we always know that before things go out into the public, it is circulated internally. And then once somebody feels so disgruntled, they share it with the public. And that is exactly what happened here. So now there's another question that needs to be asked is, was the city manager and the mayor aware of this for the last 2 years? And I hope that this investigation, the internal disciplinary hearing that they are doing, that they actually ask those difficult questions and don't just put him out. Because, you know, this mindset had to be supported in some way, shape, or form for him to feel so comfortable to discuss this on a public. And when I say public, when you are on a Teams meeting or on a Zoom meeting, even if it's confidential, anybody can record it with their phone and anybody can share it publicly. So I call it a public meeting. So for him to feel so comfortable with that tells me that there are, you know, more things at play here that we aren't aware of right now. So hopefully that investigation goes deep and it's not just a case of finding him guilty and then moving on. We need to get to the root of the problem here.
Ronaldo, now, is it any surprise that US President Donald Trump has turned down the invitation to the G2 summit in South Africa? Oh, gosh, what have I said? Let me try again. Sorry. Ronaldo, is it then any surprise that US President Donald Trump has turned down the G20 summit invitation?
No, I think, you know, if you were a betting man or a betting woman, I think you could have bet on that and your bet would have been fine. I just, you know, the fact that people are shocked by this shocks me, because we could see this coming a mile away. You know, Donald Trump, I think almost within the first month of him being the president, said that he is concerned about what is happening in South Africa. He actually put it so clearly that there was no ambiguity with the statement that he made. He said that he's got issues with the land reform policies in South Africa, specifically referencing expropriation without compensation, referencing the Expropriation Act. And then added to that is the racial persecution of white people in South Africa. That is Donald Trump's words. Then also, we all know that the United States and Israel are allies, and they are in the same camp. And the fact that South Africa took Israel to the ICJ and then opened that case against Israel, that is a massive problem, according to the United States. Then also, Mitsubishi Jonas, the special envoy to the United States that said all these terrible things about Donald Trump. Let's not forget, he called him a racist. He called him an extremist. They were in a far right winger, I believe. I'm probably missing one or two things that he said. But the fact that the South African government knew all of these things, not because Donald Trump didn't say it, but because he said it, and he clearly illustrated, this is the problem that I have with the South African government. And then them just ignoring it. I mean, we know that Cyril Ramaphosa is refusing to get rid of Mitsubishi Jonas. We know that they have doubled down with things that has happened. We can look at, you know, the military meeting with Iran. We know the renaming or the attempted renaming of Sandton Drive. There's just been this constant attack from South Africa towards the United States. And ultimately, we are dealing with somebody that are far more powerful than us. And look, I understand that if we stood on principle, then that could be a valid reason. But what principle are we standing on? We are defending Hamas. We are standing with Iran. We are standing with the baddies. You know, whenever you watch a war movie, then you always go, yes, I can't believe that these people didn't realize that they were the bad guys. And this is a clear case of that. And unfortunately for South Africa, if ever there had to be a movie made of this, South Africa would be the bad guys. And this is how the government is reflecting the people of South Africa, to make us almost look like the villains of the world by supporting Iran, by standing, you know, behind statements that are made in which you are proclaiming that somebody is a racist as the president and that is a right winger. It is just completely unacceptable. So ultimately, what we are left with is Trump not attending the G20 summit, and now J.D. Vance will attend in his place. Look, I think J.D. Vance will probably cause more trouble than Trump. So that's going to be exciting to have him here. But I don't think that, you know, he's going to say a lot of nice things about South Africa when he's here. Also, the thing that's a little bit confusing is, now we know that the next G20 summit will take place in the United States, and usually there's a handover from one president to the other. So I think that Trump's goal here is to embarrass South Africa, and I think he will be successful, because ultimately we have to look at these allegations that has been made by South Africans against Donald Trump, as well as the government's actions, because actions speak louder than words. Meeting with Iran, the MTN saga, and everything that South Africa has done with the ICJ case just clearly illustrates that, you know, we don't want to take this seriously, and we will rather be on the side of terrorists, because Hamas and Hezbollah are the, you know, are the individuals or the organizations that South Africa is aligning to. Because if you stand with Palestine, you stand with Hamas. If you stand with Iran, then you stand with Hezbollah. So ultimately, it's going to be a situation where in 20 or 30 years from now, when the history books are written, they're going to write very negatively about South Africa, knowing that the majority of people in South Africa are actually against what the presidency and South African government is doing, and rather siding with Donald Trump and the United States government.
Lastly, Ronaldo, last week we spoke about the extensive benefits for parliamentarians. Now, a viewer needs clarification on the medical aid benefits.
All right. So I think the issue that probably is at hand here is the organ donors list. So let me just make something very clear. There wasn't actually a piece of paper that you could look at and it stated, you know, that you will be bumped to the top of the list when it came to organ donations. However, if you look at what happened to Tsabalala Msima when she was a parliamentarian, and we all know that she was an alcoholic. Well, she enjoyed her booze. Let me rather rephrase and say that she really enjoyed alcohol. I retract the previous statement. But what I wanted to say with regards to that is she immediately got access to, an organ transplant. And now the question is, okay, so which was her medical aid? Okay, it was PARMED. What role did she have? Okay, she was a member of parliament. So I'll leave it at that. But what I'll say additionally with regards to, you know, maybe some pushback that we have received with regards to making that claim is when I was meeting with the PARMED officials, they ran through all the perks. And then I think there were two people that were seated with me. And then the Tsabalala Msimang came up and it was pretty much just a nod. It was pretty much when the question was asked, it was a nod. So that is where I based my information on that of. Now, you know, if I am proven wrong, I will gladly apologize. But I'm sorry to say that when you look at what happened to Tsabalala Msimang and also the discussions with the PARMED representatives that were there when we had to get our tags and when we had to sign up for our tools of trade, tells a different story. So maybe it's an internal agreement and nothing public. Who'll know? But you know, if I'm proven wrong, then I'll gladly apologize. But then, you know, we'll have to ask the difficult question about Tsabalala Msimang that was part of PARMED and managed to get that organ very, very quickly. Now, I'm not sure if there were other members of parliament that needed organs in the interim. But if not, then, well, we've got a record of one person wanting an organ and one person getting an organ. 1 + 1 = what, Chris?
So at that time, you felt confident that if you needed a heart in a hurry, that you wouldn't have to queue.
Oh, Chris, I don't have a heart. So, you know, no, at that point in time, I believed what the people around me were saying. And it wasn't one of those tongue in cheek. It was literally like, yes, okay, so this is one of the benefits. This is one of the benefits. This is what was being discussed. So if I'm wrong, then I profusely apologize. But we have a case of where, you know, we can look back and go, well, this is what happened. So can you please explain that?
Okay. And I just wanted to check about fund benefits. This viewer said he spoke to some opposition parliamentary members who say they do have shortfalls in fund benefits.
I'm sure there must be some shortfalls, but remember, at the end of the day, it all depends on who you go and see. What I can do, and I probably should have done it for this one, I still have the leaflet of PARMED somewhere in an email. So I think just for transparency's sake, let's park this to the next one. And then what we can do is we can go line by line as to what the benefits of PARMED is. Because, you know, I think I touched somebody on their studio when I referenced PARMED. So now let's open this and let's go a little bit into detail. And I can promise you that medical aid, the benefits that you get from PARMED, remember what I said, the first year it's about 6,500 rand. It's very expensive. If you want to add a family member, that's also 6,500 rand. So it's not a case of it's 6,500 and then an additional member gets 3,500. No. It's 6,500 for adults, and I believe for children it's something like 2,500 to 3,000 rand. I speak under correction there. It is a very high profile medical aid. I remember during that period with my previous medical aid, I wear contact lenses. So when I needed the contact lenses with my previous medical aid, I always would have to pay in, you know, 200 or 300 rand because I wear monthlies. With this, I could literally order 6 scripts of it and it would be completely covered. So what I'll say is let's park this and I will come with the receipts. I'll come with everything that is needed in order to show that there might be shortfalls. But, you know, if you know, if you go for veneers at the top and at the bottom, of course there might be a shortfall, you know. it doesn't mean that, you know, they don't still cover it 200 to 300%. But I'll come back with all the information.
Thank you, because it is in the public interest to know exactly what our parliamentarians benefit. Now, thank you, Ronaldo. And just a reminder to our viewers to join us next Sunday from 11:30 a.m. to say that final farewell to Neil De Beer. That was the NDB Sunday Show with Ronaldo Goos and me, Christine. Thank you, Ronaldo.
Thank you, Chris. And once again, next week, Sunday, I hope that everybody will, you know, if they can't be there in person, just join the live stream where we say our final goodbyes to Neil De Beer. And it's still a difficult time. And Chris, I want to say to you, thank you for all the hard work that you are doing behind the scenes. I know that you and Neil were very close, and you are playing a critical role in paying, you know, tribute to him in the best way possible. So thank you for what you are doing.
Thank you, Ronaldo.